You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
If you live in Canada, chances are very high that you or your recent ancestors were immigrants to this land. Immigrating to another country is rarely an easy or straightforward matter. In recent years, immigrating to Canada has become even more difficult as the Conservative government has significantly tightened immigration policies. It seems that not only have the policies changed, but that Canada's approach and goals around immigration have shifted significantly too. To discuss this, we're joined by Zul Suleiman. Zul is an immigration lawyer who, since 1992, has worked primarily in refugee law. In recent years, his work has focused on other classes of immigrants also, and he joins me in the studio this morning. Hello, Zul.
Hello.
Now, what's been the general thrust of the Conservative government's approach to immigration since coming to power?
Well, the main thing that I could note is that there's been a real push towards economic outcomes. What they're trying to do is to engineer the system in a way such that it's not so much about nation building, which was the kind of mythology or the overarching framework before, but more and more it's about tinkering with the system so as to achieve better economic outputs, better integration. There's also been a very strong push towards security, towards managing our borders. And there's also been, I think, a strong push towards trying to manage the functioning of the system. They brought in a variety of changes, administrative changes, as to how the immigration process itself functions. So I would say it's been a vigorous 4 to 5 years under the Conservative minority governments and a great deal of interventions in rejigging the system.
How is this different from what we'd seen before with the Liberal government?
Well, let's look, for instance, at the example of the Federal Skilled Workers Program. So here you have individuals who are highly skilled in an occupation, who must generally be fluent in English, who usually have 4 years of work experience, etc. These individuals, before the Conservative government came into power, there was a more open occupation list. There were less stringent requirements on English language testing. Processing was less centralized. Now processing commences at a processing center in Sydney, Nova Scotia, and then goes out to the embassies where the actual immigrant might be. So it is much, much harder, for instance, now to come to Canada as an immigrant under the point system. But when you need 67 points out of a possible 100, let's say, points to come to Canada, it's not easy to get 67 points. On the other hand, if you come to Canada with those 67 points, your odds of integrating economically, and these are the indicators that the government is looking for, are better. Because if you are English-speaking, if you have 4 years' experience, if you're not too old, you will land on your feet, hopefully, and integrate better. The problem is the exclusions that occur, because not everybody speaks English fluently, not everybody has that kind of work experience, but they may be able to contribute to Canada in other ways. And those other ways were part of the nation building that we talk about, or the mix that we want. I think under the Conservative government, the mix is much more targeted, much more focused on certain outcomes that they want. And that's been a large change. The public won't see this until another 5 or 10 years go by, because it takes a while for the immigrants to come, to settle, the effects of that mix to play out in society. And then you look and say, oh, something's different. What happened? Well, what happened is 10 years ago, the system changed. So I think we'll start to see this story break a bit more in the next few years.
No, it's interesting when I'm listening to you talk, because I work in the immigrant sector myself, and I see people come in. For example, I see a lot of people who come in as engineers, which is obviously one of the jobs that's on the list, and yet when they get here, they can't find work, or
yes.
As nurses, and they get here, they can't find
yes.
work.
Well, there's a significant issue around de-skilling, you know, and there's been a lot of written about that. For instance, very large story recently around how the Philippine community has slowly been creeping up to become the largest individual sector of individuals that are coming into Canada. Well, these are skilled people who de-skill themselves to come and work in the caregiver industries or other industries, what we would call lower occupation codes, when they finally can become immigrants, they're finding it very hard to get back to their skill base.
Now, when you say there used to be a large number of occupations that people could come in under, how much has that been reduced now?
Well, I think the list at the moment is about, I think there are somewhere between 27 to 38 occupations now on a list. Before, there would have been thousands. What happened is, again, those people are involved in career planning, etc. There's something called the National Occupation Classification. It's a large taxonomy of all the occupations that exist. And to come to Canada before the rule changes, as long as you are in an O, A, or B occupation, you could apply. What has happened now is that the government has gone in and weeded out only about somewhere between 20 to 30 occupations. There's a cap of 20,000 immigrants that can come under this program and a cap of 1,000 people per occupation. So as of 2 weeks ago, 1,000 architects could come to Canada. 572 have already applied. So get your applications in before the 1,000 cap is reached. And only 20,000 total skilled workers can come in any 1 year. So it's a very micromanaged process now.
And is the general number of immigrants per year going down then?
The mix is going down in different categories. The government is committed to a mix of somewhere between 220,000 to 240,000 immigrants a year.
That
hasn't been significantly changed. In fact, there was a celebration that this year they processed and landed over 250,000 people. In all of the categories. But, you know, there's the family class, the overseas refugees, the inland refugees, the skilled workers. There are a whole group of people that make up that group of 220 to 250,000 people.
Well, let's talk about the Family Reunification Program, because that was in the papers a couple of three months ago. What's happening with that program?
Well, again, families when they get reunited. So we're generally talking about parents and grandparents. What happens there is that they add a great deal to the vitality of our economy, but they don't do a lot for economic outputs. So what has happened is the government has cut back on the quota for parents and grandparents, which means now if you're trying to sponsor a mother or a grandmother from India, instead of waiting 4 or 5 years, you're going to wait 7 to 11 years, maybe more. And if grandma is already 80 years old, this is not good news. And so in the large countries where individuals are coming, the lines for parents and grandparents has gotten very, very long. For spouses, common law partners, same-sex partners, those are still a priority. But they've essentially created a cleavage in terms of who gets better processing priority. So rhetorically, the government can say, oh, no, we're not opposed to families at all. They're still within the mix. But from a processing perspective, it takes so long that effectively they won't be here, many of them, unfortunately, in their lifetimes.
So you can come in as a skilled worker and we can benefit from your training in another country, but you can't bring your parents.
Exactly. And so this is kind of running contrary to some of the rhetoric of the government around they understand ethnic communities. And then there's been a lot of comments in the press about ethnic and very ethnic, and somehow that the government understands and connects to these communities, however defined. Well, without getting into stereotypes, for a lot of those kinds of communities, parents and grandparents are very important. They're part of the family network and child rearing and grandchild rearing. But all of that's going to be slowed down significantly. So on the one hand, there's this rhetoric of we understand these communities and we know how to cater to them, or we know what their values are. And on the other hand, from a practical processing perspective, parents and grandparents will have a much harder time getting into Canada because the lineup is longer.
Has the overall funding for immigration been cut in general?
You know, it's interesting. When you speak about immigration, there are many sectors. There's been a great increase in funding on the security side. So anything to do with interdiction, border services, detentions, security reviews, fraud, investigations about all of that, those units, which are generally within the Canada Border Services Agency, are doing very, very well and growing at a big rate. If you look at processing priorities, there is money going into technology support. There are new technology systems being put in to manage the flow of immigrants. There is some money being put into inland processing, but settlement services are being cut. So in Toronto, for instance, there was an amalgamation of settlement services where many traditional settlement providers were told that they had to meet different criteria, which would lead to amalgamation of the service. In Vancouver, there's been a different process, call for proposals on how to deliver certain kinds of employment and settlement services. So this is where the tension between the federal funding and the provincial funding starts to develop, because the feds write a check over to the provincial government under certain conditions, and then the province starts to play with how some of that settlement money gets spent, and the province's priorities can be different.
Now, I think there's probably people who think that immigrants come to Canada and then get free services, but in fact, immigrants prepay for the services. They have to pay quite a substantial fee to come in.
Yes.
Is that money then not being returned to them in services?
Well, that's another great question. I mean, normally to come as an adult immigrant, it's $550. Then you pay a $490 permanent resident or landing fee. The program generates somewhere in excess of $300 to $350 million the last time I checked. There was a lawsuit commenced on the basis that, in fact, government programs, some of them are meant to be revenue neutral, and that the immigration program was not revenue neutral. It was actually generating some profit, and then that profit was being pumped back into general revenue funds. So they do prepay when they come, and largely studies show that within the first 6 months to a year, certainly the skilled worker category has a fairly good uptake in terms of getting into the labor force, but usually not at the skill level at which they immigrated. And that's the shame there. So no, I think there is a hue and a cry that immigrants absorb and are a burden on services. The data doesn't show that. The data doesn't bear that out. There is some truth that the family class tends to inject less into the economy, but then that's overlaid by what's happening with the economic classes.
And as you say, that they provide child care support too,
of course,
when they're coming in.
Of course.
Despite these policies by the Conservative government, they've managed to increase their share of votes from recent immigrants in recent elections. How have they managed to do that?
Well, I think that the government is trying to build a bridge around conservatism and basically catering to communities by saying, we don't like crime, you don't like crime. We don't like certain kinds of social things that are going on, you don't like them. We think we understand you, you think we understand you, and trying to build these kinds of alliances. For me, it's a bit puzzling because I think if you go down to a deeper level, I think the overall agenda of what's going on within the immigration program, I don't think is that well suited to what these communities, I think, are looking for. And so when is that disconnect going to occur? I don't know. The sad truth, though, is that certain people are drawn to power, whoever is in power. And so there is some truth that if there's a prevailing government of the day, certain communities will want to adhere themselves to that government because that government has some power. And so really, I think what's going on here is not a sharing of values, but a brokering of power. But it isn't articulated in those terms, because that's just too naked, and nobody wants to talk that way. So I think, to be honest, I think what's happening is it gets guised in terms of these other shared qualities. It's mysterious to me, but then there are many things I don't understand.
But a lot you do. Thanks very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Zul Suleiman. He's an immigration lawyer.